Hello, welcome to the Mucking Up Punch podcast with me, your beautiful host, and Keith, not so beautiful as me, but still beautiful.
I'll take that.
He struggles. If I compliment him, it throws him completely. He'll be off for the entire podcast, be trying to slip Star Wars into every conversation. It's not going to be happening. But we do have a few things to talk about this week. So, how are we doing, Keith?
I'm good. I got to the cinema this week, which was cool. I don't think I've been to the cinema in nearly a year. I think maybe over a year. So I got to the cinema this week, going to the cinema again in a couple of weeks.
Didn't you watch Oppenheimer at cinema?
Yeah, so that would have been the last time I was... Was it 6 months
seven,
ago? Okay.
7, 8 months.
Maybe a bit longer. Yeah.
Feels like a year, though.
I think it was the summer. So yeah, it's the last time I was at the cinema. I saw Oppenheimer at the cinema. And I'm going again, I think, next week or the week after, whenever Ghostbusters is out, which is out very soon. I'll have to go and see the cinema.
Yes.
But I did that. It's been a good week. It's been a good week. And we'll get into what I've been watching and stuff in a bit. But it's been a good week for some good TV as well this week. So, yeah.
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 Cool. That's cool. I haven't seen Dune Part 2. I know you have. I've got Monday. I'm going to see it with my father-in-law because I watched the first part. Really want to watch them back to back as a complete story. It sounds odd because I think that some of the bits might not work until you put them all back to back as a big story. Like with Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, one doesn't quite work, but when you put 1 and 2 together, one works, if that makes any sense.
I enjoyed the first movie immensely when I saw it at the cinema. I think it was one of the most cinematic things I've seen in a very long time. And I watched it again recently because Netflix has got it on 4K. So I slapped it on the big screen, that TV there. And whilst it works, it's still better on the big screen. I'll go into the second one when we talk about it later on without doing any spoilers. But I will say that whilst the book is a complete book, this is a trilogy, and unlike Star Wars, it needs a part three. That's all I'm going to say. And I know what happens in the part three, and I know what he's angling for. You will enjoy it. You will enjoy it because you like your sci-fi. You like your cinematic sci-fi. You will enjoy it. If you enjoyed the first one, you will enjoy this one.
I can remember watching, I watched, David Lynch's Dune back in, I think it was during COVID. I watched it then because when I was locked up just trying to find entertainment, I watched that. And one of the things I know that's not in there, you don't get to see the full-blown navigators that you do in the David Lynch one.
You don't see the Space Guild. Now, you do see them very briefly, and the ones that are in David Lynch are not exactly how they are in the book. You see the Space Guild in the first film when the Emperor's sort of, spokesman lands on Caledonia and they come to basically officially say, you're off to Atreides, mate, go take care of it kind of thing. Those dudes with the white and the orange faceplates, those are the Space Guild. No, the Space Guild are not here. And that is one of my criticisms. I have a few criticisms, but not many. Okay. But again, we'll get into that. So, although we do have to, one of the news stories is going to be around this. So, yeah. We'll get into that.
Okay. So Biffa said that he was a fan of the original. My problem with the first Dune film was that I didn't know where it was going to end. That was it. I was watching it. It's going to end now. Is it going to end now? And I kept on doing that all the way through the film. I didn't know where it was going to end, and that kind of fucked the ending up for me, which kind of ruined it, but that was all on me.
It wasn't. And I remember you and I discussing this at the time. That's how long we've been doing this. It's been 3 years. But I remember you and I discussing it at the time. And actually, it was one of my criticisms of the first one was that it's very much made that you have to know the book in order to get it. If you knew the book, most people knew where this was going to end. About two halfway through that first film, it's like, okay, I know where this is going to end. This is going to end with Paul finding the Fremen, because we're nowhere near where we should be if this was going to be one thing. So
Sting wasn't in it. You didn't. That's my thing.
Yeah. Well, we're going to.
I know. You got the new guy in it. So yeah, with that, let's put a bump in and move on to the news.
Hi, this is Nigel, and I'm talking in my lovely narrator's voice. Bask in its loveliness. But don't bask for too long. We need your help. Come to YouTube and watch our videos for the love of God. Well, send Keith round to your next barbecue and he'll eat all your food.
Toasty!
You have been warned.
Sorry. It's the best one we've got at the moment. I haven't put anything together. So, our first piece of news is in regards to another Tron film, which is Tron Ares. There's a first look at it, set to get to our screens in 2025. Jared Leto is not only starring, but producing. So that makes me go, I sent this to Bapster this week, and I said to him, goes, look, as long as we get another really cool Daft Punk soundtrack off the back of this, I'll be happy. But if it's got Jared Leto in there, I don't know if you want to do 30 Seconds to Mars as a soundtrack rather than Daft Punk, which kind of makes me, So, I was going to read the story, and then I realized that it doesn't read quite well. So it's just basically the original Tron movie was celebrated for groundbreaking visuals and a glimpse into digital frontier, and became a cult classic despite its lukewarm reception. Fast forward to today, and they're going to bring you a new chapter called Tron Ares. The film stars Jared Leto and directed by Joachim Ronin. Aims to invert the original premise by bringing an AI program into our world amidst Disney's recent controversies and changing landscape of movie consumption. Tron Ares is facing a reignition of fans' enthusiasm and navigating to... Oh, fuck it. Anyway, long and short of it is Disney are doing it. Shit.
Yeah. I don't get this because... The second one, was it Tron Legacy, finished on a cliffhanger. You know, one of the digital programs got out in the real world. So how are they going to address that? Are they going to acknowledge its existence, or is this another attempt at a sequel, or is this a completely different story just happening in the Tron universe? I don't get it. Because for years they were trying to make a sequel to Legacy because it didn't finish on a cliffhanger. And I quite enjoyed Legacy, loved the Daft Punk soundtrack.
Oh, that was awesome. The best bit of that soundtrack.
I had a feeling they were going to do another Tron film when I saw that Tron light bike ride. I hadn't realized that it was actually in production and being made. And then I saw Jared Leto, and I probably had exactly the same reaction as you. I was like, okay.
Yeah, look, right, I'm not saying it can't work. I'm not saying it can't be the same level as Tron Legacy, because Tron Legacy was... I like Tron Legacy, but I can understand why they didn't. We talked about Doctor Who when Jodie Whittaker was in charge for her first season. It felt like no one existed in the universe.
Yeah.
And that's how Tron Legacy felt. It's this really cool place, but no one was there. Yeah? I don't know how they did it. They managed to make you feel isolated, but without... you know, putting all those bits in. So it's an interesting one. Fuck it. I don't mind saying it. My worried is it's going to be Surprise Whammon, even though got Jared Leto in it.
Surprise Whammon.
Or it's going to be the digital version of Morbius. It's when he yells.
I really don't get the sort of whole thing about Jared Leto. I don't get it at all. I mean, apparently he's a bit of a dick to work with. He hides behind being a method actor. And to be honest, it just sounds like a complete dick. And I just, you know, I've never really liked him in anything. He was terrible as the Joker. He was terrible in Morbius. He was terrible in every film I've seen him in. I mean, be it I haven't seen his entire films, but the films I've seen him in, he's terrible. So yeah. I don't get it. I don't get this love affair with him that Hollywood seems to have. I will go and see this because it's got Tron written on it. And big fan of the first two. So, yeah. But if the trailer comes out, and as you said, it's 30 Seconds to Mars kind of style music, that will switch me off a bit. Because even the original Tron movie has that sort of dark Vangelis style music to it, which Daft Punk kind of channeled into their own soundtrack to a certain extent. And it was epic.
Yeah, it was. The thing that sticks out for me is that soundtrack. Mm. I think of that film, the first thing I think I start thinking of the music, because it's fantastic. Mm. I'm hoping if I just get it, if Daft Punk are doing it again, then I'm in automatically.
Yeah.
Because I'll have a soundtrack I can listen to at least for it. The downside is Disney.
True.
Which is not great, but hey, it's one of those things. I'm reserved on this, so I'm going to keep my gob shut, and then fingers crossed it'll pan out when it does.
Agreed.
So shall we move on to our next story?
Yes.
So, Mark Ruffalo, known for his role as Bruce Banner, the Hulk in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, has concerns over Disney Plus. He believes the move to dilute the franchise's mystique with sheer volume of content potentially undermining quality and uniqueness that fans cherished. Ruffalo reflected on a broader discussion within the industry about the balance between content quality and quality. Content quantity and quality. Especially as Disney aims to revamp its approach to Marvel Studios. It's a lot of crap coming out of Marvel. A lot of crap.
I'm slightly surprised that Ruffalo has said this. I agree with him. But, you know, he said some silly woke things and has kind of very much towed the line with Disney. I mean, he was in the god-awful She-Hulk. And surely he knew when he was in that how bad it was. I mean, he's in the scenes where it, you know, they're just egregious. He's not wrong. I don't know what Disney's done with Disney Plus, but to be honest, I would have had. I don't know why Disney did Disney Plus. And you know, I can understand having somewhere for their back catalogue, but why didn't they just stick it all on Hulu? Hulu and then keep that going as their sort of streaming platform?
I think I get where you're coming from. See, when it comes to streaming, yeah, I think it just goes like this. Streaming should be where you keep your back catalogue. So you got back catalogue of everything in there. So instead of having a DVD library, you got your back catalogue there, and you can just go through entire seasons, entire sets of films, all there, all convenient. Don't need to worry about putting additional content on there. Just a back catalogue, bump, job done. Yeah. Mm. And then if you're clever, you can then tie it into your TV programs and stuff. So the moment they finish showing, bump, they're ready there to watch, or you can watch them streaming, just like you do with iPlayer. It's that simple. You don't need to sit there and try to beat Netflix at their own game. Play a different game. Sony have done this most sensible thing during this whole streaming wars thing. They've just turned around and said, we're just going to make TV shows and bit and films, and if you want to buy them, then you want to buy them, and we'll make money that way.
I could understand, you know, having the odd show here and there, and you could have done something in Marvel, but, you know, the trouble is, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really only got good when it kind of decided to sort of drop away with doing the MCU or towing the line with the MCU and doing its own thing. And the last couple of seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. were good. The problem is, it suffered from the fact that it didn't have the big tentpole people in it, and you know, the only person they really managed to convince other than Coulson was one episode with Samuel L. Jackson in it. And that's been partly the problem with these Marvel shows. They've kind of had the B-list in there. They haven't had like Captain America in them. They haven't had any, and I'm glad they didn't, because it would have ruined that as well. But they went so much into it, like we're doing all these shows. If they'd just done Loki, for instance, you know, just done Loki, that would have been okay. You know, people liked Loki, people don't like Loki. I get it. This isn't a debate about it, but, and it's the same with Star Wars. You know, Mandalorian was okay, and that could have carried the franchise.
You'd figure out squeezing Star Wars.
No, but I because those are the two things he's talking about. I'm not trying to talk about Star Wars, but the same thing has happened. They've diluted that as well as Marvel, and there's numerous shows that are meant to be coming out that I'm just not excited about. It's the same with Marvel. I mean, it really killed Marvel for me, that and the fact that all the movies have been shit. I don't think it's Disney Plus on its own.
I think that the first problem that Disney have got is they don't hire writers and they don't hire directors.
No.
Yeah, because they don't hire writers and directors, they cast writers and directors, so they can say, "Oh, look, we got the first female woman of color who was the runner-up in the 100 meters in the disabled Olympics. And Special Olympics." It goes, whilst holding a bowl of Special K, it goes, "Aren't we so amazing? Give us money." Yeah, and it's like, that's not how it works. We turn around and say, "Hey, you know what? We got the guy who did the script to Legion. He's doing Loki. And we got the director from Fargo. He'll be the showrunner on it." Yeah, and you go, "Ooh, that sounds interesting." But they don't do that. And that's the problem, because if they were hiring competent people, this wouldn't be an issue. The problem is they do not hire competent people.
No, not
that's it.
They've stopped hiring competent people after phase four. They argued those idiots that wrote Captain Marvel, and that was technically slapped in between, you know, so technically, but they've stopped writing decent movies. They've stopped hiring decent writers. They didn't hire anybody good for the other franchise. I'm not going to mention it. But it's the same with all of their output at the moment. Exactly. Their output that's outputted under Disney.
Yeah. I'm just really hoping that Elon Musk buys Disney. He joked about buying Twitter for a couple of years before he bought Twitter. Yeah. And if he buys Disney, that's going to be much more interesting. So much more interesting.
Disney's not learning from its mistakes. It's not firing the people that have failed. It's letting them spend billions of dollars on things that every fan is saying right from the beginning is not going to work. And lo and behold, when they come out, they don't work. No one asked for another Indiana Jones movie. Everybody was saying it's going to flop. And then as soon as they announced What's Her Face in it, everybody knew it was going to flop. What did it do? It flopped. You know, it's not like, and then what did Disney do? Oh, it's the fans' fault. Well, no, it's not. It's like you open up a business and sell something and you blame the customers when they don't buy it. Oh, it's their fault. It's not mine. And that's what, and everyone else around them in them goes, yeah, you're right. And this is the problem. This is the bubble in California. They've got all this positive affirmation of that it's the fans' fault. It's the customers' fault. But at the end of the day, this is not sustainable.
No.
At some point, Disney is going to lose all of its reserved cash, and it's not going to be able to operate. The banks are going to stop giving them money to fund movies because no movie is working out. Their movies keep flopping. They didn't have a single successful film last year. Their tentpole movies, their summer blockbusters, all flopped. Now, the media might not be talking about this, but that is a fact, right? And at the end of the day, there is a sort of war going on with the shareholders. They know it. And I keep saying this, if something doesn't change, I see them spinning off the parks to protect the parks, because it's the only bloody thing in their entire thing that's making any money right now. Because Disney Plus isn't.
Yes.
For now.
For now.
I think the parks will always have, as long as they don't like tear down the sort of castles and things like that, and keep you know, the familiar feel of the parks, keep their back catalogue, which is still popular. You know, I mean, you only have to look at what happened when that city cow attacked Star Wars people. Star Wars, I've got it on the way. Snow White, and even normies reacted to that. So much so that Disney have been handing out brown envelopes to try and rehabilitate it, because the amount of money that they've already spent on that film, write it off. It's going to flop. I think the only way that Disney is going to survive this is you have to fire Iger. If you know what's good for you, fire Kathleen Kennedy, just because she's a woman. If she was a man, she would have been fired years ago. Yeah. And unless something changes at Marvel, because I know what they're all hoping. They're all hoping that Deadpool 3, you know, they're going to slightly reset the world in Deadpool 3, and that's going to change it. But I don't think it's going to work. People are going to see Deadpool because it's Deadpool. It's not going to rehabilitate the Marvel universe, and you're casting in Fantastic Four with casting the Richard Reed as who you've cast there. Just shows you haven't got a clue. You're not in contact with your fan base. You, the people running Disney, hate their fan base, and it's obvious.
Yeah.
So, as a shareholder, I'd be firing these people, because at the end of the day, your customers are the ones that pay you the money, and you don't hate your customers no matter what. And if you do, then you're in the wrong business. So, cool. Yeah. So I agree with Mark Ruffalo, but it's part of a bigger picture.
But the problem is, it's Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
I know.
So, right.
So I put this in.
Yes. So Denis Villeneuve has hinted at a trilogy for his Dune sequel, part two, with significant buzz. The director has ambition to adapt Frank Herbert's Dune Messiah into the third film is palpable. Contingent on the green light from Warner Brothers and Legendary. Currently, Villeneuve is juggling three scripts with completion of any determining his next project. This is Dune. Amongst these three scripts is Dune 3, which is nearing completion. Villeneuve dedicate the craft of compelling storytelling committed to quality over rushing for quick profits. This approach in the sequel-heavy industry is refreshing and needs to maintain the depth and integrity of cinematic storytelling. He's spending his time getting it right,
And it's happening. I couldn't find a story that actually confirmed this, but all of the YouTubers I've watched have said, yeah, it's happening. Villeneuve himself has said it's happening, and considering it, Dune 2 is still currently the highest rated movie of all time on IMDb, it's happening.
I'll bring that score down.
We'll see the opening weekend figures, but I suspect it's going to be high. And the way he has constructed this film, again, without any spoilers, people are comparing it to The Empire Strikes Back. I'm not bringing in Star Wars. This is what people are comparing it to. It, in some ways, does feel like that. It does feel like it's constructed like that. It does feel constructed like a middle movie, even though it's the second part of the first book.
I've heard people compare it to The Two Towers, which, you know.
It's closer to Empire Strikes Back. But the third, if you know Dune Messiah, the third one is going to be more like the third film of the prequel trilogy. Again, it's difficult if you don't know the Dune stories.
He doesn't have a big really, worm in that one, does he? Sorry, just...
No, but I will tell you, bad news for you. Unfortunately, Jason Momoa will be back in the third one. but in a very interesting way.
Will he come back as Patrick Stewart? Sorry. Will he come back as Patrick Stewart?
No, he's coming back. He does come back as a character called Hiate, who then eventually is realized it's Duncan. And I'm not going to ruin it for you because I'm not. Villeneuve has made some changes in the second one. So how and where Messiah. There are several things that Messiah will definitely have to do. And I don't think it's not going to be the happy ending, but if he nails it, arguably this trilogy of films is going to eventually be compared to Lord of the Rings and Star Wars as a set of trilogy of films. And in many ways, rightfully so. The cinematography of these films is mind-bending. And when we start talking about Dune 2, there's one thing I want to talk about. And when you go and see it tomorrow, see it on the biggest screen you can see it on, because it's one of the only films where actually seeing it on the big screen does make an impression. I'm up for Dune 3. I want to see it made. I think it has to be made, bearing in mind where part 2 has left off. But it ain't going to be a happy ending.
Yeah.
So, but the casting is fantastic. The casting, with one exception, has been really, really good. And I'll talk about that. I'll talk about it when we come to the movie, because when we come to that section. But the news is that it's happening. I couldn't find a story that confirmed this, but even Simon Mayo and what's his face said, yeah, when part 3 comes out, everybody is saying that part 3 is coming out. That would indicate that the movie's done well already. The buzz around this film is amazing. A lot of people are saying that this is that, you know, we've peaked for 2024 already when it comes to sort of real cinematographic film. Well, when you look at what's stated to come out, Ghostbusters is going to be fun, but I'm not going to say it's like, you know, this is next year, Oscars, this film.
Okay. All right. I haven't seen it yet. I'm not going to make any comments on it. I see it on Monday. We'll talk about it next week so we can have a proper talk about it. And that way, you know, spoilers, give people enough chance to go and watch the film too.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it when we come to talk to it later. No spoilers.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the third and final piece then, which is... it's the Borderlands movie. Now, you don't know much about Borderlands. Now, I like and don't like this, and I'll explain why after we've kind of gone through it, okay? So, yeah.
God, I hate this planet.
Would you look at that? A ladder! Unfortunately, my design doesn't facilitate this type of...
Destiny awaits.
Legend has it
that kind of had me with the music.
Massive treasure hidden in some secret vault. And if you go hunting for it, you'd better take any help you can get. Because it's on the weirdest, most dangerous dumpster fire of a world in the universe.
God, I hate this planet.
What is that smell?
Piss wash gully.
Ew!
Put the window up.
I don't want him!
Roll the window up!
Roll it up!
It's pee. It's pee.
Why do you think it's called piss wash? How did it get the name?
It's in my mouth!
How many people have died looking for this vault?
We have something they don't, baby girl.
Okay.
What?
Major issues.
Time to make it rain with your body parts.
What did I tell you?
Minimal
no
explosions.
I said no explosions.
Step aside, bitches.
Ooh, mine's bigger.
What are you doing?
I needed a gun.
So you asked for it.
There's only one of you in the world, and you're special.
Uh-oh.
Kill them all.
It's quite difficult.
What's happening right now?
I'm expelling the excess lead. I can't go if you're looking at me. Actually, scrap that. I can. I really can. Actually, it's helping.
Are we really waiting for this to finish?
Keep looking at me.
Right. So we definitely get a copyright claim on this. So it looks like they're going for a Guardians of the Galaxy style film, which, if you know anything about Borderlands, it kind of fits in that. Cate Blanchett as Siren character, I can't remember her name, Lilith, I think her name is. She's fine, that works. Then you've got, what's his mush? Kevin Hart as Roland. Terry Crews would have done a better job because Roland's quite a big fella. But there is some people who, how can I put it, who aren't in there, and they're mostly male characters. So there's a character called Salvador.
Why male characters, Gunzer. By any chance?
Well, Salvador Gunzerker is probably more South American. And then you've got Gage, she's a girl, Lilith, Mordecai, again, probably South American. Axon, white guy. Brick, white guy. Zero could be white guy. You've got Krieg in there, who's the psycho guy with the mask, but he doesn't talk much. It's dripping a bit of, it's got a bit of, what do you call it, for modern audiences in there. It's annoying because I said before, Cate Blanchett works as that character. Jack Black, that little robot claptrap, is fucking annoying. Yeah. He is really annoying, and I think Jack Black will do a great job of doing that really annoying character.
Who's the young girl in this? Because that looks like the actress that played Ahsoka, and if it is, she's very white in this, which means they black-faced her.
Well, they orange-faced her, didn't they? So there's a character, there's a side character. They got right. So hang on a second. So you've got Cate Blanchett's character. Here we go. So let's crikey.
So that is the actress that played.
Yeah.
I think that's the one that played young Ahsoka. I'm bloody sure of it.
There's a character called Tiny Tina in the second game, who's the sister of the writer. Ashley Birch, her name is, who voices the character. Now, she's a side character, and she was also deemed a bit off by the gamers. So putting that character in there over, say, Brick or Axon or Mordecai, probably a better character in there, or any other character, seems a little odd that you've got her in. And this is what I mean, it's kind of dripping a bit of estrogen. And I'm really hoping that this guy here, if I can find him, where is he? Because there's a character in the bad one, in the, what do you call it? The second
one. He's almost at the beginning, but I know where you mean. I think he's at the beginning.
No, I'm talking about the bad guy who is supposed to be. I don't know if he's supposed to be Handsome Jack.
I read a news. No, that was that was something else.
Yeah. So you've got the character who's supposed to be like Handsome Jack and whatnot. If I can find the damn thing, but I can't.
Right at the beginning. I know who.
No, it's not right at the beginning. It's the bit where they're all surrounded. Yeah, it's near here. And she's about to blow him up, and then have I gone too far? It's somewhere around here. But you've got that kind of key character-wise. You've got Tannis, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, who's a character you do need in there, because she's going to be the one who explains about how the vault works and this, that, and the other.
Do you know what? I've kind of been liking Jamie Lee Curtis. The one thing that she was in, the film, what was it? Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I mean, I know a lot of people have issues with that.
I'd like to point out that film is fucking dire. That film is crap. I've enjoyed it.
You can enjoy it if you want,
but I'm just disagreeing with Keith. I'm not disagreeing with you. Your opinion is perfectly valid, perfectly fine, but Keith's isn't.
I didn't say it was the greatest film ever.
It was the greatest film ever, which is the annoying thing on it. So it's, it's got a sniff of modern day audience. I'll watch it because it looks interesting. So hopefully everything will work out fine. You can work it out, but this is like, they're starting to do video game adaptations, and hopefully they might get some of these right. So, please be good. Please. I want you to be good. Please be good. Anyway.
I saw the trailer last night. It made me smile, but yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, it's just the fact that they've missed out a couple of the male characters in there. They also haven't got the guy who runs the gun shop, because it starts off with him. They, if you play the game, you're on his bus as you're coming in. It was technically ripped off from another short animation on YouTube that I watched. I know that. But as you're coming in on the bus, you've got that there. And I don't know. So I think we'll have a look at the chat now, because Biff has been biffering away here. So let's put music on. So, this, oh my God, he's been busy. All right, so let's start off with the first one. Biffer's a fan of the original Dune, which, yeah, I can see that. It's weird because it was made in the time in the 80s. So if you watch Brazil, it's got that, the two of them have a certain feel to them. It's in the future sci-fi, and it's dirty, I think, because of Star Wars. Dune 1 was put good, but slow, and the abrupt, yeah. It had an abrupt end to it, and I that's where I struggled with the ending. So yeah. Okay. I asked Google Gemini for a picture of Duke Atreides' death scene. I got Tupac murdered in cold blood. Very funny. Very funny. Tron Ares is another movie that puts a chick in it and made it lame.
Possibly.
Yeah. Don't be surprised.
I agree with this one. You've got to make an angry Hulk movie. I do agree with that one.
Yeah. We haven't seen Hulk since the beginning of Infinity War.
Proper Hulk. Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Yeah. So it's proper angry Hulk. Plus, you want to see Hulk when he gets super angry, because he goes even angrier, like World Breaker Hulk sort of thing. Mark Ruffalo isn't leading man enough to give us a Hulk solo film. So the reason they can't do a Hulk solo film is because of the rights are still with Universal. Still own the rights to the Hulk and are being leased out, as long as they don't do a solo film. But they can do a solo film if it's done with anyone but Disney. So if it was still with Paramount, they'd be fine. I have to agree with this. I watch it, but I watch it the same way as I watch a football team lose 11-0. It's funny.
Gareth had apathy for Star Wars. I have apathy for this now.
It was after Guardians. Quantumania. Sorry.
You and I were sort of like, you'd had apathy for Star Wars at the same point I kind of developed for this. The Endgame didn't work for me. I'm fed up with people going, Endgame is the greatest MCU movie. No, it wasn't. Infinity War is much better than Endgame. Critically, it is much better than Endgame. And, you know, that five-year time jump is just fucking stupid. The only thing that you can say about Endgame was good is the final battle scene, and it's moments. It's moments rather than being a good and complete film. Mm. So I don't care about the MCU. You've got to fire Kathleen Kennedy It's not that I think Disney's going to get better by firing her, but they've got to fire her because she's failed in her job.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think anything will save Disney. And, you know, they're going to need a miracle to save Disney. But you've got to fire Kathleen Kennedy, because if she was a man, or there was a man in her role, he would have been fired years ago.
I'm going to argue with that, and I'm going to point at Kevin Feige as an example.
Yeah, but okay, Kevin Feige has a track record of producing 10 years worth of successful films, right? There is a difference. Kathleen Kennedy hasn't got that track record. There is no track record to look back on. Feige has, right? For the first 10 years before he got battered with the woke stick, or, you know, touched with the Loki pokey pokey stick, and turned into this moron, or ate one too many things, you know, in the California bubble kind of thing. But Kathleen Kennedy's not got that track record. She's never actually, you know, she took over as studio head at Lucasfilm. She produced one film that everybody went to see what it was all about. And most people criticized saying it was a carbon copy of the fucking New Hope. Then there was what can only be described as a complete fucking travesty, right? You had the Star Wars Rogue One, which I still like. But it's the only good one that... It's the only good movie that's been produced under her. End of.
Okay. And she interfered with that. Borderlands movie hijacked by old ladies. I prefer surprise whamming.
If you're referring to Jamie Lee Curtis, kind of like Jamie Lee Curtis,
and
I always
Kate
have.
Blanchett, not
yeah,
exactly
I like
Kate chicken.
Blanchett as well. And they can ham it with the best of them. And I'd watch those two on screen. If it is surprise whamming made for modern audiences, and I really hate that term, because what modern audience? Unless you're making it for 5-year olds, there is no such thing.
Just making a little short TikTok.
I'm making Star Wars for a modern audience, so you're making it for no one then. I'm making Star Trek for a modern audience, so you're making it for no one then. I mean, if they bring back Stargate, make it for the fucking fans. Anyway.
Okay. And this last one here is Borderlands, the Lilith Fair of movies. If you've played Borderlands 1, 2, and 3, you'll understand why Lilith kind of is like the feature character. You can disagree with it because the third one did make the game for modern audiences to the point that the bad guys were technically Twitch streamers. Second one was much better. Handsome Jack as a bad guy was fantastic. Yeah, it's when he sits there and he claims that he's got a horse made of diamonds and he's called him Butt Stallion over the radio to wind you up. That's just amusing, yeah? And then there's like the Doctor Who references where you go into this shipyard and it goes, the following people have died recently, and they go through all the regenerations of Doctor Who up to Matt Smith. But, you know, that's interesting. Anyway, I should have faded that out. Oops. Very unprofessional of me. So you said you watched a thing called your thing that you've been watching this week was Shogun.
Yeah, well, I finished watching Avatar. I quite enjoyed that series. Facebook keeps sending me posts where people are criticizing, saying it's worse than the M. Night Shyamalan movie and blah. That's bullshit. It's way better than that. But anyway, I finished watching Avatar. I quite enjoyed it. You know, it entertained me. If you're a diehard fan, okay, maybe, but I actually think it was much closer. But anyway, so I knew this was coming. It's on Disney Plus here. I think it's on Hulu and FX in the States. It's on Disney Plus in the UK. And it's Shogun. And it is a remake of a TV series that was gone, you know, a while ago. And every fucking Japanese-American actor that is a Japanese-American actor is in this, including the dude that was like, all, you know, every time when Ronin needs to turn up. He's there. You know, some Japanese samurai guy, he's there. He's the guy that was in John Wick 4, you know, as head of the Japanese unit. He was in Endgame when Ronin, he was the last Ronin. You know, that Japanese dude, right? And he's really good in this. But here's the kicker. It's an American-made TV show. And yet, about 80% of it is in Japanese with subtitles. And the first two episodes have been really good, actually. They're really, really good. People are comparing it to Game of Thrones, and again, I really don't get this. People are stupid these days. The reason they're comparing it to Game of Thrones is because it's got some boobies in it and some violence, right? You know, a dude gets boiled alive in the first episode. Yeah, they did do that. And, you know, baby killing, which is not, it is, but it isn't, and I'll explain that in a minute. My only criticism of this is they have chosen for all the Japanese characters to actually speak Japanese, and that's fine, right? The thing is, all the Portuguese characters speak English when they're meant to be speaking Portuguese. So all the English that you're hearing in this show is meant to be Portuguese. And it kind of just don't, I don't get it. I don't get why you switch from Japanese to, you know, you have all your Japanese characters talking Japanese. So why don't you have all your Portuguese characters talking Portuguese and we'll just have the whole damn thing subtitled? Because the amount of English that's in it isn't that much. But the first two episodes are really, really good, really interesting. And the last, episode two ended with me wanting more, because that, I mean, there's a bit with who is going to be the Shogun, interviewing this English guy, because at the time the Japanese didn't know that English people existed, because the Portuguese had told them that they were, you know, they were the they were all the white people and that their religion was Catholic. There was no such thing as Protestant. So when this English guy turns up, effing and blinding, they're like, who the fuck are you? But there's a bit right at the end where they're advertising about it. It's brilliantly acted, and it works in Japanese and English. And they were like, you know, they were going, well, you know, you're outnumbered. And he goes, yes, we're outnumbered unless I win. And then the Shogun guy just... shy smile comes on his face, and you're like, okay, he likes him. And it's got the chick from Monarch in it, who speaks perfect Japanese, not bad on the eye. Plays an interesting character. She's Japanese, but she's a Catholic, and she's having to translate what this guy is saying, and she doesn't believe him because she's been told, trained to speak Portuguese, and, you know, brought up in the Catholic faith. For the last 14 years, and it's interesting. It's political. It's a lot of Japanese going on, but I've really enjoyed it. First thing I've seen on Disney Plus in a while that I've gone, do you know what? I'm going to watch this. This is quite good. It's feudal Japan. It's samurais. It's everything.
It's funny you brought this up. One, I'm slightly out of focus, which I'm not happy with. I'm thinking maybe more. Sorry, my battery on my camera ran out. Did you know that the British fought the samurai?
Yes.
I got to check. I'm sure we kicked their asses too.
It happens later on, but yes, I mean, essentially, he's dropped a bit of a clanger because the Japanese are obviously very proud, and the Portuguese are trading with them, but the Portuguese signed legal documents with the Spanish that basically says they own them. And this English guy's turned up and not only told the Japs that this exists, he's also told them that they're building a secret base at Macau that is full of Japanese soldiers that, you know, they could use to quell any kind of internal, you know, because there's the threatening of civil war about to break out, and that would disrupt trade, and the Portuguese don't want that to happen. So there's lots of politics. There's lots of different characters. The first episode ends with, you know, one of the soldiers who'd had an outburst killing himself, but not before he kills his infant son to destroy his entire bloodline. Oh, yes. And again, this did happen in feudal Japan. you don't see that on screen, but it's implied that it happens, and that's the baby killing bit. There's another bit where there's this really sort of nasty guy that boils somebody alive because he's interested what happens at the point of death. But later on, this sadistic motherfucker, right, you kind of end up having a little bit respect for. And it's done legitimately quite well. And then in the second episode, he comes back again. So this sadistic motherfucker, you end up kind of liking a little bit. And in the second episode, it's even better. I recommend this. If you can cope with subtitles, because you are really going to have to cope with subtitles, I think you can watch this. Generally, the first two episodes are great. Actors are great. The guy that's playing the sort of, not the English guy who's in it, who you think is the main character, he's not the main character. It's one of the regents who is played by that guy who's just in fucking everything, and I've liked him in almost everything. He was in most recently John Wick 4. He is the head of the Japanese Continental Hotel. And you've seen him in everything. He was in Last Ronin. He was in Endgame. He's the dude that Hawkeye kills when he is the Ronin. You know him. You take one look at him, you're like, yeah, I've seen him in everything. Because he's, you know, we need a Japanese good guy kind of Ronin-style samurai dude. This guy gets cast. In Bullet Train. Yes, thank you, Biffa. He's in Bullet Train and more. Yes, he is in Bullet Train. He is the sort of, you know, father of the dude that goes thing, and he is in Mortal Kombat as well. Yeah. Anyway, he's in this. He's really good in this. Like, really good. And I really enjoyed it, Gaff. I genuinely really enjoyed the first two episodes. Even though I have to sit there glued because I have to watch it to understand because the whole goddamn thing is in Japanese.
But it's really I'm not gonna attempt to pronounce it because I'll just bollocks it up.
But it's worth watching. And then, obviously, the other thing that I watched this week, and I'm not, because we'll talk about it properly next week, was Dune 2. I loved it. I'm going to put it out there now. I loved it. It is one of the most cinematic films I've seen in a long time. There is a bit which only works on the large screen where, this isn't a spoiler, the Emperor's Sardaukar army are all lined up. You kind of saw it in Paul's dream in the first one, and you see it in the trailer. It doesn't work in the trailer. It works on the last screen because the way they filmed it, you've got this Sardaukar and you've got this massive army, right? And you're just like, holy shit. Right? And you get how big this army is. Like, how are the Fremen going to go up against this? And then the camera pans around, right? And then you just get this explosion of sort of sand, and the sandworms come out, and the sheer fucking size of them is on the screen. And you go, I'd shit myself at that point, even if there was 10,000 fucking troops behind me. That is a... And you feel that. You feel that emotion of the troops because you get the epicness of it. I don't use that word. Like, it's amazingly shot, this film. There's a bit where, again, where he's walking through a crowd, and the way the masses of people are there, and it looks like it was done, it's practical, that there are like thousands of people, but it could have been digital, but the way it's done, it looks practical, is truly brilliant. My one criticism of this film, and I when I found out about the casting, I was worried about this, and it kind of played out. And I don't want to say it because I don't want to, because I love the actor, right? I love the actor, but unfortunately, it doesn't work in this part. Unfortunately, Christopher Walken is Christopher Walken in this film, if you know what I mean. And
yes, that's, you know what I mean.
The Emperor was a bit more sly than that, the book version of the Emperor, and it doesn't quite work. And it's a shame because I love Christopher Walken. But it is Christopher Walken on screen and not the Emperor. For what's her face? Pure is his daughter, is really good. There was a scene that I was afraid that they, again, the David Lynch scene. So if you've seen the David Lynch movie, the bit where Paul comes back in and the old Reverend Mother is there and she starts to talk and he goes, silence, like that. That is probably one of the best scenes in the David Lynch movie because it totally reverses. They did that in this and it's there and it's even more powerful.
Okay.
And what's his face as the psychotic Sting character, Aston Butler, is brilliant. I mean, just fucking psychotic and sinister and just brilliant. And David Batista, really good.
I can't remember. I'm sure the Batista character gets killed in the David Lynch one.
Yes.
Or was it Baron? It was. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Because he gets the severed head is presented to the Emperor. Yeah,
and similar here, but again, I won't run it. But Batista having that rage. You see, the guy that plays him in the David, it didn't work. In the book, this guy has rage. And when you read the book version of it and you realize, you know, Batista was so well cast in this. That rage he has.
There's not too much about it.
I'm not talking too much about it because you see it in June 1.
That rage he has.
It's brilliant.
I'm not ruining it.
I'm not putting any spoilers, but I loved it. So go and see it.
Okay. All right. So I want to talk about a Grand Tour Sand Job because I love that. That was fantastic. I always love them. It's supposed to be the penultimate one, but I don't think it is. I think it's a case they'll go away for a couple of years and they'll go, oh, let's do it again. And they'll do it again. I really did genuinely think that. There was a lot of stuff that happened in that. That train at the beginning. How long was that train when they were sitting there waiting for it at the station to get their cars and bits? It was massive. I've seen big long trains in the States, but that dwarfed because they're quite long trains that you get the old cargo trains crisscrossing across the United States. But that was amazing. And then just watching them trying to get things sorted and their boat that failed miserably. That kind of stuck
it
out.
It felt
a bit.
The problem with it, and I think this is why it does need to go away a bit and come back, is it's gone a bit too scripted. Whereas, like, my favorite specials from Top Gear are like, you know, the North Pole one, which was genuine and real. Yeah. Whereas a lot of this was scripted. Don't get me wrong, it was good and there was moments, but it's become a bit too scripted, and I felt that if they'd done a race or something across that, you could have conveyed the same thing, because what an epic country. I mean, what an epic... I think they might have filmed June 2 there. what an epic country. I did enjoy the boat, though, going across the river, and the bit at the end where, you know, they were going to go on to Dhaka and couldn't, that was, I think... quite genuine. So there were moments where, okay, we can't go on to Dhaka, and I did kind of like seeing them do it, but don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it, I watched it, it made me laugh, it made me smile. I like the bit where they filled up James's car full of sand.
God, that was so bad.
That was so bad. And I found it genuinely interesting about the DB9 and Hammond managing to fix it all. And I've heard things like this before. So,
what I was amazed at, because we know they've got support vehicles, what I was amazed at is 20 grand for a DB9.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, I want to buy a DB9 for 20 grand. I'll buy a fucking DB9. How cool will I be?
The thought, I'm not gonna lie and say the thought hadn't escaped me either. Although, I don't know, the E-Type, the Jag did quite well. The Jag, Clarkson's Jag did quite well, actually, considering. I was surprised how well that Jag did. And, you know, I love the fact that he had the sticker, Jag.
Yes,
really.
The Jag.
Go on.
The bloody fuel truck thing that which they set up. I know you don't like the scripted thing, and it was just, and they blew up on the runway.
I knew it. At the minute The thing was, it was kind of predictable what they're going to do. The minute the jet ski, fucking whatever it was, sailed off into the sunset, I was like,
yeah,
you wait, it's going to come back and it's going to blow up the bloody truck. And of course, it comes back and blows up the bloody truck. But look, again, you know, if you're going to do it, you might as well make it funny. And it was funny. Yes. And it certainly was one of my more favorite specials, partly because they were in a place of the world that I hadn't known a lot about. And I have to admit, when I knew it was a real place, but I kind of understood, even though it was scripted, I understood what's his face, Richard Hammond, was saying at the beginning. He goes, that's not a real place. Because you kind of go, is that real? No, I'm sure.
I am really sure that Mauritania is where pirates used to hide.
Yes. That's what I thought I'd heard. So I'm pretty damn sure I had heard of Mauritania, but I understand.
There were three pirate hideouts. There was Nassau, Mauritania, and a third one. They all featured, with the exception of Nassau, they both featured in the Uncharted games, and that's how I know them.
I mean, that train at the beginning was just epic. The way that drone was flying over it just continued. How bloody long was that train?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. But I would have liked to have seen a bit more of, like, were they really genuinely camping? And where were they staying? Because, like, they said that they found this one really grueling. But you know, filming this one in real life, but you didn't get a sense of that. And I think I would have liked to have got a sense of that. Because, you know, that was the one thing back in the early days of Top Gear, it was more real. Those early races they did, the things they did, and the gruelness of it. You know, I think that North Pole one is still one of my favorites. Yes. Because it was real.
Definitely.
I mean, I know they were dicking about a bit, but it was genuinely real what they were doing. And you could see what Hammond went through doing his thing. I like all three of them being together and things like that. But you know, you knew immediately when they were doing that drag race what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So it was things like that. But I hope it's not. I hope we don't lose them. You know, I like watching their individual series. I kind of like Richard Hammond's workshop, even though it's not on Amazon. I kind of like that because I like the people he's got in there. They're genuinely interesting. And I enjoy watching that. I like Our Man In, but they only did three episodes in India, which was, I just still don't understand why.
Yeah.
They only did three episodes. And I love Clarkson's Farm, which is coming back soon. Thank God. But I liked it. It was entertaining.
It was entertaining. Right. So this is the bit of the show where we're supposed to talk about something we like, and we were going to do Harry Potter, and we both forgot. So next week we'll talk about Harry Potter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I'm streaming to the wrong YouTube channel. I'm streaming to Gaming Face Punch and not Monkey Nut Punch. That's why we've only got Biffa, because Biffa's the only guy who's subscribed to Monkey Nut Punch. So yeah. Oopsies. Fat fingers.
Right. That explains it.
So, hey, that explains a lot.
That explains it.
Yeah, so I cocked up. I know. Don't worry
about
it. Next week, I'll sort it out. I'll download it, reload it, and pop it on the other one. It'll be fine.
And next week, we can really talk about Dune 2, because I want to get into the nitty-gritty of it.
Yes.
I do want to talk about it. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, please, you know, and you're watching this, go and see it. It is worth it. It is worth it. War, just epic. Probably one of the most cinematic films I've seen in a long while. And the guy behind the cinematography of it definitely should get the Oscar next year, because I don't think anything else is going to come close. Just the sheer beauty of it. But yeah, you have to see it on a big screen. I'm tempted to try and go and see it at the IMAX here again, because there are several scenes that just seeing it on a big screen really, you know, do it justice. And I've got the Dune, although it's hiding away, I have got the June to June popcorn thing where you have to put your... Have you seen this? Have you seen this online? Have you seen this? Right, hang on. Just for you ladies and gentlemen at home, this is everywhere, and this surprised me because it doesn't usually happen in Thai. This is the official June popcorn bucket. How do you get your popcorn?
It looks like
your hand gets stuck, right? And then your popcorn gets crushed, right? It is generally an evil design, but it's become a collector's item.
It looks like a fleshlight for an elephant.
Even Savage, on YouTube, he turned one of these into a mini diorama. But this is everywhere, and this has been like showing up on social media, so I kind of had to buy it. But it's quite good value. I mean, you get a proper metal tin. I mean, it's a collector's item. It's going to be worth a few bob. But I actually cheated and did take the sandworm thing off. But I don't often buy these things at the cinema because usually you don't see them anywhere else. But this is everywhere around the world, this one. And I thought it was quite a nice little collector's item, so I bought this. So, yes.
Okay.
But yeah, go and watch it. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay, I'm going to watch it. I've got Monday with my father-in-law. I just need to book the tickets, so I'll do that in a moment. Right, so thank you very much for watching. But thank you very much for especially watching on the Gaming Face Punch channel and not... I like it. Hang on a second. Typical. It's like Gavin.
Well, I can see where he's going with it, because it does kind of...
Fleshlight for an elephant.
Yeah, it does when you get your popcorn out. And that's what a lot of people have been saying on social media. I mean, I'll give you that one. It does. But I bought it because of the hoo-ha about it. I thought it was kind of unique. So, and it cost me a tenner full of popcorn with a drink, which these days is quite cheap.
Anyway, on that note, next week we'll be talking about June part two, and it's Harry Potter.
It's about girth.
Oh my God. Keith, say goodbye now, please.
Goodbye.
See you next week. Bye-bye.